Hey, we're back again. This time we are doing movies from the 80s. I'm Jen.
I'm Carrie.
And we're going to be discussing our top movies of 1980 through 1989. Which ones should be redone, which ones should not have been redone. That kind of thing. Before we go into all of that, Carrie, any news that you've heard?
None.
I know, it has been so quiet. The guys have been doing nothing. They've both been working, as far as I know.
Right.
But have you seen the Loki trailer?
It's
fantastic.
Yep, I have. Yep.
It is absolutely fantastic.
The promise of you, Loki. Mm. Yes.
I'm telling you. Oh, and something else I noticed. Any of you that have Hulu, look up Night Manager on Hulu. There is another version now done by Bollywood.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Barry, as a matter of fact, was the one who clued me in because, you know, I don't look at the what to watch. If I go to one of these streaming services, I do so because there is a particular movie I want to see and I don't pay attention to the rest of it, you know.
Right.
So, I hadn't seen it. I'm not gonna.
You know, I it looks like it's got huge production value.
It does. However, the reviews are not great.
No kidding.
Yeah, said that somebody had taken its teeth out. It had no bite.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, but...
Too bad.
But the Bollywood system works under a set of constraints that we don't have. That England doesn't have. So, you know, I get it, but that still kind of sucks because, I mean, that's the major part of the series.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. It seemed like an odd choice.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, for them.
That's what I thought. They do better with musicals, dance numbers. I mean,
yeah,
I'm not being...
Just big presentations.
Right,
you know,
I'm
like
not being rude.
Pieces.
I'm not trying to be ugly about them because I love Bollywood productions. I really do. They're fantastic. They're very, very visual.
Yeah, right. And there were a lot of subtle kind of, you know, there's a lot of mystery and that sort of thing in Night Manager. And
yeah, and it's...
Yeah, I don't know. Or just remaking it anyway, and I understand, you know, let the right one in, you know.
Right.
You don't have to, the Americans get a hold of it like, oh, we're going to do our own version, and it fails. So, and, you know, let that be a lesson to us. That being said, apparently India lost for that stuff. And they're like, well, we're going to try and remake it. And it fell flat and it didn't work out. And as Americans, I think you and I can probably be like, yep, we know. We've seen this before.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, and that's why I bring it up today. Because we have seen so many reboots that we just sitting there going... No. That doesn't work.
No.
And I was also noticing, I sent you the full and complete lists, right?
Right.
Did you notice how many movies are... We would not be able to remake them today. They have lost their meaning throughout the decades that have passed. Stuff like 16 Candles. Do you know people don't date anymore? Young kids, they don't date.
Oh, they don't?
No, they
honestly,
do not.
Honestly, seriously, they don't?
No, I have a friend that's a high school teacher. And never does he hear about, a date that went bad. No, they hook up. They connect. They don't. The girls are expected to pay for their own shit. The guys...
What?
And 90% of it, the girls are the ones chasing the guys instead of the other way around.
Huh.
Yeah. And of course, it may just be the area I'm in. You know, this is not the best place to be. But, you know, so it could be the area too. But yeah, there's very little, quote, dating going on.
That's messed up.
Extremely unfortunate. I agree.
Yes, yes, yes. This is coming from a place from a liberal.
Yeah.
That's actually rather disappointed with the liberals.
Well, yeah. That makes two of us. If we don't stop fighting amongst ourselves, we're never going to get anything done, and it's going to be so easy for someone else to come in and take over.
Well, and I mean, we're all kind of screwing it up anyway. You know, now here we are, apparently, where, you know, on the left, you know,
let's not get political. Kind of,
yeah. And then on the right, and yeah. So, yeah.
Exactly. Never have we been so divided, and that is a sad state of affairs.
Indeed.
But, yeah. So, anyway, off the political beam there. That's the one thing I refuse to soapbox on. I will soapbox on pretty much anything else, but political issues, no.
Well, I'm soapboxing on it because we're really all at fault.
Agreed.
You know, both sides.
Agreed.
And that's just kind of tragic.
And the problem is, you know, common people like me and you, we're able to say we are all screwing up. All of us. Nobody is blameless. But
yes.
In the political circles, it's their fault. They're more interested in assigning blame than they are in finding a solution, and that is a problem.
Right. They point the finger at them or they.
Right.
Exactly. And that's really where I'm kind of coming from. You know, a liberal that's basically saying, you know, we're all guilty.
Yeah.
100%. And so now nobody's taking, I don't know, locally, nobody is taking anybody, young men aren't taking girls out on dates and paying for it. That's crazy.
Yeah, no kidding.
There is going to be some really sharp entrepreneurial young man that's going to be like, you know what? I'm going to pay for this date, like all of it. I'm going to pay for the restaurant. And he's going to end up being a superstar at school.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. The girls will be lined up.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Considering what they're chasing now. Yeah.
Well, you know, also the prices. Let's face it. You and I, before we started this, we were talking about the ticket prices.
Yes.
For these movies that we're talking
about. Oh, yeah.
And you know what? What kid can't afford to pay for two people?
Right. At $3.25 or $4, you know.
Right.
But,
Or Coke.
Right. Now it's, for a matinee, it's like 13 or 14 bucks.
Insane.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. And we don't even want to talk about the concession stand.
Yeah.
No. You'd better take a $100 bill.
This is why I still wear cargo pants.
Exactly. Why do you think women carry purses?
Exactly.
Because you can hide everything. And if you got a big purse, hey, you got drinks, you got freaking M&Ms, you got Skittles.
Yep. You know,
oh, yeah.
If we can get a soda and we can get a box of candy in, we're good to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the one thing you can't hide in the cargo pants is popcorn. A woman with a big purse can hide two or three of those little mini bags of popcorn in that bitch, I'm telling you.
Yep, you ain't wrong.
So yeah, what's a movie without popcorn? There you go.
I agree. That is true. I must have the popcorn. I will spend, the $20 and it's going to be endless.
No kidding, right? Oh, man. But yeah, okay, so was it a surprise for you, the top grossing movie of 1980?
No, not at all.
Me either?
Not at all.
The top grossing movie for 1980 was The Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars series.
Oh, yeah.
Episode 5, I believe, is what they titled that one. But it grossed over $181 million in 1980. So average ticket price there was like $318, $325, something like that. $389 maybe. It was somewhere in there.
Average price per ticket was $2.69.
Oh, I was so off. $2.69, okay. And I'm the one who did the math. Hey.
Well, it's because inflation ended up getting kind of weird
in the late 80s and the early 90s, yeah.
Yeah, you'll see it. Yeah, you know, if you want to do the math, you will see it rise
Each year it rose a little bit. I think it went from like 289 to like 275 or something like that.
You know. 278 actually in 1981 it goes up to 278.
Okay. Yeah, see, I wrote them on yours.
Yeah.
I forgot
to. Well, you know, when we talk about The Empire Strikes Back, we're talking about the days of the blockbuster event movies. And this is one of the early, entries, you know. People would wait in line. And when Star Wars came out, the cultural impact can't be understated.
Not at all. It was so huge. I was four when Star Wars came out. When the original Star Wars came out, I was 4 years old. And I still remember going to the drive-in and seeing this movie with my parents.
Wow. Well, can you imagine, you know, just a couple of years later, they're like, guess what?
We got another
a sequel, and it's going to be bigger.
And yeah, it was huge. It was over-advertised, if there is such a thing. But yeah, it worked. They just kept coming, these massive, massive movies. And the budgets really were, they were big for the time, but they weren't huge. They weren't over the top, you know, four or five, 6 million at the time was over the top. And
yeah, they were still using some practical effects. They were using models.
They were using, I know at one point in time in the first Star Wars, the speeder that Luke Skywalker drove, basically what they did, they put Vaseline on the lens of the camera to fuzz out the wheels.
They actually put mirrors so you could, you know, they mounted mirrors on either side of the body so you couldn't see the wheels.
Yeah, they, but yeah, in the redone version, the where they actually went through and cleaned up the whole video, they actually do a commentary on it. And that's where I learned the whole Vaseline thing, you know. So yeah, they had all kinds of little tricks and stuff to make it look way spectacular that didn't cost a whole lot of money.
Right.
Nowadays with CGI and all of this, you can do pretty much anything.
They literally use Adobe to, you know.
Yeah. Hell yeah. But at the time, that was like the most spectacular movie ever created. You know.
Yep. Massive.
Not a surprise that it ended up at number one. There's one movie that, now there's several that I think deserve a remake. I really do. The Shining is one. Private Benjamin is one.
Private Benjamin is my big pick for this year to get a remake.
Well, Goldie Hawn, come on.
You gotta find somebody. Well, I mean, it's a close to my heart. I love that movie anyway.
Right.
You know, maybe you could do a reboot and do Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon would probably, with the special effects we have today, Flash Gordon would probably be the pick. However, just movies close to my heart, movies I'd love to see redone, if done properly. The Blues Brothers.
Well, you're just addressing the elephant in the room, and I mean, you're right.
But, you know, the thing is you cannot replace those actors. You can't. I'm sorry, no. You just can't.
No. Yeah, the Blues Brothers literally, like, in parentheses, to everyone in America, it was like the Blues Brothers, and then in parentheses, John Belushi, Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
You know, you would have to come up with a new property, I'd almost say.
Yeah, John Belushi, you know, you cannot. You can't replace him. He died too soon. God rest his soul. But, yeah.
And, you know, like, young in his prime, Dan Aykroyd.
And let's not forget, Carrie Fisher. Carrie Fisher carrying a machine gun.
Right. No, and she fired that thing.
Like, oh, she did.
M16.
Yeah. The only thing that could have made it better is if she was wearing the outfit from Return of the Jedi.
My dad loved Blues Brothers, and he was a military man, and he was also kind of a car that had a great sense of humor. And that scene where she just sets off and empties the magazine of the M16 down the tunnel towards him, Dad ended up saying, "Notice, Carrie Fisher does not flinch or close her eyes when she depresses the trigger." And we were like, "Oh my God!
Oh
go
yeah!
Back and watch it. She doesn't do it."
Yeah, she actually practiced for weeks.
Did she?
Yeah. Yeah, because that was the whole thing. She couldn't be afraid of the gun.
Right.
You know, in the movie, she was so full of rage, the gun would not even, it would be inconsequential to her.
She was Scarface before Scarface.
No shit, right?
That's a really great bet.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool. She practiced for weeks.
Yep. Just so that she would not, because if I remember correctly, she had never fired a weapon before. She had fired the fake guns. Like in Star Wars, she takes a gun from one of the downed stormtroopers.
Stormtroopers. All
and right. fires it. But she's more afraid of that thing than she is the automatic she fires in Blues Brothers.
Right.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I'd love to see the Blues Brothers. You said Private Benjamin is your pick, right?
Yeah, you know, I will go for Private Benjamin because you only have to replace one.
Right. And that is Goldie Hawn. Although I would love to see if they remade it. I'd love to see Goldie Hawn come back as a drill sergeant.
Yeah,
as a
drill instructor. My God. Perfect. Come on, Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. Come on,
hear
us. Listen to what we're saying.
Yeah.
And this is the decade of Stephen King. Right off the rip, 1980, The Shining.
Okay.
Stephen King has several in this decade. There's a couple years he doesn't have any, but not many.
Okay.
I think there's one year where he has like three on the list. But yeah, this is definitely the decade of Stephen King.
Yeah.
Now, 1981, moving on. Top did not surprise me at all. This was one of my dad's favorite movies.
Huge.
Oh, yeah. Raiders of the Lost Ark. Guys, Indiana Jones. This could also be known as the decade of, God, I want to say Han Solo, but that's not his name.
But Harrison Ford, yeah.
Thank you.
He was very popular.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, Raiders of the Lost Ark. So the first 2 years of the 80s, he was in the top grossing movie.
Yeah.
That one actually did less well than Empire Strikes Back. It only cleared $168 million plus.
Yeah.
So, a few of those that I would love to see, my personal pick.
Oh, my God.
All right, guess.
I mean, well, sorry, I'm doing oh my God just because this might be...
The year.
This might be the year.
Yeah.
Jen, like, this might be the year. Ah.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, you've got Stripes, you've like got Cannonball Run, you've got Arthur, you've got Excalibur, you've got, if I'm remembering correctly off the top of my head, you've got Clash of the Titans, I think. Escape from New York. You've got... Oh,
yep.
Man. Yeah. This is also Hiddleston's birth year. So we've covered some of these.
Wow. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, we've covered some of these.
You know what? If I'm going to pick for you...
Right.
Which one...
It's not in the top 10.
I'm going to go with you. I'm going to go with The Howling.
Oh, so close.
Werewolf in London?
Werewolf in London.
So, 81 was apparently the banner werewolf year.
It really was. You had a lot of extraordinary creatures in 1981, let's just say. But you had some really down-to-earth kind of ordinary people doing extraordinary things movies in 81 as well.
And this is also where you get, just looking around, the first of the reboot movies that they did in the 21st century that failed miserably.
Uh-oh, which one is that?
So it's Arthur. Dudley Moore.
Yes.
And Arthur, if you get caught between the moon and New York City.
Yep.
Again, great. And there was that thing, Liza Minnelli.
Oh, my God, yes. Good,
you know, was the butler. And then in the 2000s, you get...
Oh, did they really remake that?
What, remake Arthur?
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't even know that. That's how bad it was. I didn't even know it.
And that's kind of part of the tragedy, and this is why.
But I mean,
you know,
hey,
I really think that
Liza Minnelli. Come on, you can't replace her. Another one that died too soon.
2011. Excuse me. That was it started Russell Brand.
Oh God,
it was
no.
Russell Brand. Yeah, Russell Brand was Arthur.
I love Russell Brand. I really do. But as Arthur,
I do too.
As
but yeah, it
Ew.
Was a bomb.
I bet. That's just bad casting.
And they ended up saying...
who played Liza?
Houston Chronicle ended up writing a review of it, and they were talking about Russell Brand's performance, and they said, make no mistake, people are going to hate Russell Brand in this.
Oh, no. But it's not not the right part for him. It's just not.
No.
Sorry.
And Arthur was kind of one of those things where he was the bumbling rich alcoholic
right.
that was self-depreciating and just wanted to kind of get with Liza Minnelli. Russell Brand is more like the 21st century creature where he's got probably more than like an alcohol problem.
Well, the thing about it is Arthur knew he had an alcohol problem, didn't care.
Right.
Was not concerned with it. You know, it's a problem for everybody else, but hey, I'm all right.
Yeah.
Russell Brand won't even admit he might have a problem.
Right. Well, that being said, we're talking about, you know, An American Werewolf in London and The Howling.
Yes.
And they did do An American Werewolf in Paris.
Yes, they did. And that one was okay. I'm not gonna down it. It was a decent flick, but nothing beats American Werewolf in London. That was just, it was so classic.
Well, you know, that transformation sequence, that
oh,
blew
God.
Our minds back
yes.
in the day. It
yes.
blew our mind. It was grueling.
With
it
that,
was tough.
But imagine that with today's technology.
Oh, could have been amazing.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, still grueling, like super, super painful.
Well,
and
right.
we would see, like, bones,
right,
you know,
and you know, you got it. All these movies where, oh, it's just a very easy, quick, oh, 1 minute you have, you know, skin, the next you have fur, you know, not a big deal, but you got to imagine that it would have to be more than that.
What that transformation
right.
would entail, right.
Exactly. If you really stop to think about it, American Werewolf in London really brought that out, brought it to the forefront, and made people
yeah.
think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it did make you think about it. You know, we think about Lon Chaney, you know, doing, you know, the Wolf Man, and he kind of does like this thing, and the hair is
yeah.
time-lapsed on his face.
Right.
American Werewolf in London, this guy was in a fetal position screaming
right.
for a couple of minutes while his... molecular and tissue structure
and bone structure rearranged.
But yeah, the popping, you know.
Oh God, I know that I'm a very audio visual person.
Yes.
So the visual itself was disturbing, but when you add the audio to it, oh, I cringed. I couldn't watch most of it. I just couldn't. I could deal with one or the other, but I couldn't deal with both.
You know, I'm going to throw one more thing out there. The young man that played the werewolf, was that the same guy that was in Gremlins?
I'm not sure. What's his name?
Because, you know, and I'm asking because that guy did a lot, got Charlie. He did a lot of stuff. And we really don't hear a lot from him anymore. And
no, you don't.
Because he did a fantastic job.
Let's see. American Werewolf in London. Give me a
second. His name is Zach Gallagher.
No, that's not the same guy.
It's not the same guy.
I do not believe so. I'm going to double check on that.
No, it's not
David
the same
Naughton
guy.
Is the one who played the werewolf.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. And you talk about a friggin' cast from hell. Frank Oz was in this movie.
What? What? In American Werewolf in London?
Yes. He played Mr. Collins.
Wow.
Yeah. Brian Glover was in this movie as an extra. He was a chess player. Joe Belcher was a truck driver. Griffin Dunn played Jack Goodman. I mean, you're talking amazing, amazing, amazing cast of characters here.
Oh my God! That was Griffin Dunn. Holy crap!
Yup.
Well, and Frank Oz doing a non-puppet, which he did
right.
often. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, everybody thinks that Frank Oz was the, you know, Sesame Street / Yoda guy, but Frank
right.
Oz has some acting chops.
Oh yeah, but he never wanted the mainstream. He never wanted the spotlight.
Right.
You know, he was a very shy individual. That's why he did his work through puppets.
Well, I learned a few things about 1981.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, American Werewolf in London got an actual 89% from Rotten Tomatoes, and IMDb gave it 7.5 out of 10. Metacritic, which combines all of your different ratings, 55 out of 100.
Yeah, you know, not bad.
Not bad. But yeah, that's still my top pick for 1981. All right. 1982. We'll talk about the number one in a minute, but what was your top pick?
Well, if we're talking about 82.
Yep, 1982.
This is controversial.
I know.
This is a hot take. This is going to be the hot take episode.
All right.
I know that everybody loved E.T. Don't
okay.
get me wrong. E.T. was amazing. Loved E.T.
Yes.
But for me, it's Conan the Barbarian.
Really? Okay.
Absolutely.
See, I figured you would go more for Pink Floyd.
Oh, The Wall?
Yeah.
Okay. No.
Wow.
And it's literally because it was so
weird and creepy to begin with.
It was so oversaturated. Everybody's like, oh my God, have you
right.
seen The Wall, dude?
Right.
Have you seen The Wall? And that was one of those things where something that should have been, you know, maybe undersold or what have you, but our audiences over exaggerated it, and it was great, but you know, it wasn't Conan. It
Agreed.
Wasn't.
What's funny is
know,
I do
it wasn't
believe.
The Dark Crystal. That wasn't, you know,
yeah.
The Secret of Nim.
Oh, my top pick.
Right.
But
no,
yeah,
there
I
a lot
do
of things
believe.
Coming out that year.
I do believe that Barry would agree with you on your top pick. That's what I would imagine he would pick. Would be Conan. Now, see, I'm torn. Poltergeist.
Okay.
Poltergeist with the effects we have, the original, not a part two, part three, part four, not an addition, but an actual remake of the original with today's technology. The Poltergeist would be phenomenal. Aside from that, I'm still torn. Dark Crystal, Secret of Nim, and The Toy.
Oh my God. Okay, and the elephant in the room is the toy.
Yep, because you couldn't remake that in today's society. The toy, for those of you who don't know, was Richard Pryor. He's doing cleaning for this toy company. And the owner of the company is walking through with his son. He's playing with the toys as he's cleaning, and the son sees him and says, "I want that." He says, "Okay." Right. And we'll box it up. He goes, "No, the black man. I want the black man as my toy." Well, today's society, oh my God, they would be burning movie theaters. It's ridiculous.
Right.
But the thing about it is, if you took time to watch the movie, the black man is the one who ends up being the hero and the only one who's right in the whole damn movie.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and they really kind of push it at the end of the toy. You know, Jackie Gleason's the dad, who's an amazing treasure.
God, yes.
And it was probably my favorite Jackie Gleason role.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even though it was a bigoted, pompous, rich white guy, he played the role to the hilt. Oh, and by the way, guys, that was not Jackie Gleason's actual outlook, just so you know.
yeah. That being said, how in the hell did they talk Jackie Gleason into it?
No kidding, right?
It was obviously the paycheck.
It had to have been. But yeah, Richard Pryor was phenomenal in that role. He was so good.
I would suggest to the gentle listener, actually, to watch the toy.
Yes.
And take, you know, from it what you want.
Right. And even in 1980, there was still a lot of racial prejudice. And it wasn't hidden. It wasn't quiet. It was very out there. It was very open.
And it was also acknowledged.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. By both sides.
Part of the success. Also, you got Richard Pryor doing some big screen stuff.
Massive. Yeah. And I mean, I think this is after Hear No Evil, See No Evil. Because I think that was in the 70s.
Yeah, but the toy. Right. For me, the toy was a huge tour de force. He got very emotional.
Yes. And that was not faked. That was not faked. When he's sitting there, that was one of the last scenes they recorded where he's sitting there saying goodbye to the kid.
Yep.
And
it was very heartfelt.
And he's like, you know, I can't be your dad, basically. You know, you guys need to work that out. But, you know.
Very profound.
And it was one of the last scenes they shot, and he was, in effect, saying goodbye to the actor who played the kid. And it was very emotional. It was a heart-wrenching.
And while we're on the subject, that kid ended up doing some mixed success.
Oh, yeah.
He kind of got typecast in a way.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
Really great film.
But
and
yeah.
Remaking it?
Oh.
You know,
I failed to mention 1981 Fox and the Hound. Have to mention that one. Anyway, go ahead. Remaking it, you don't... aside from the fact that because of political issues being what they are, it would never make it to the... to the theaters.
No, certainly not. And that's unfortunate in a way.
Oh, it's hugely unfortunate.
But I really think that it helped galvanize in white America, you know, the sensitivity that you have to have for, you know, people that aren't your color.
Right.
People that aren't in your social structure.
Right.
And it did it really well.
That it did. And once again, there is no replacing Jackie Gleason. There's no replacing Richard Pryor. There's no replacing, I can't even call her name, but the one that plays the wife, the trophy wife, the high-pitched, you know, Minnie Mouse sounding little blonde. But yeah, there's no replacing her either. Although I could think of enough annoying blondes that could probably do the part. But anyway.
Well, you know, it was done by Richard Donner. And Richard Donner directed it, and he went on to do Superman, you know.
Right. Now, Superman was 1978. Superman 2 is also on this list somewhere.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Now, the top grossing movie of 1982, you've already mentioned it, E.T.
Yeah.
Anybody who grew up in the 80s, those two letters are all you need. E.T. Yep. Everybody remembers seeing that movie. Everybody remembers the glowing finger and the two touching. Everybody remembers the flight of the bicycle.
That's right.
You know, these are things that we will never forget. E.T. was phenomenal, and to see that with today's technology would blow people away. However, with everything that has happened within the last, 5 years, it would no longer be a cute, touching story. It would be seen as a warning. I mean, we've acknowledged the fact that we have UFOs. The government has acknowledged the fact. So the whole alien thing, yeah, not so much would it be considered cute and sweet and nice and charming, but rather, you know, they would see it as bad, evil, warning, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
you know, 82 was definitely the year. I mean, we've got, you know, The Secret of NIMH. That was huge.
Yes.
The Last Unicorn, Dark Crystal, you know, and The Wall. Oh. Damn it, The Wall was revolutionary.
It was. The Last Unicorn. Oh, wow. Can we talk costumes? Oh! Just absolutely incredible.
Indeed.
The only one that rivals Dark Crystal for the costuming would have to be Legend.
Yes, most definitely.
And I still want the chick's costume at the very end.
Well, Legend to me is the one that you could, in fact, remake
now
you couldn't. And it'd be successful.
No, you couldn't. not without Tim Curry.
I don't know. What if you had Tom Hiddleston as Darkness?
Ooh. Ooh.
You know, you could find, yeah, you know.
No.
But
Tom Hiddleston. No. Tom Hiddleston playing Tom Cruise's part and Johnny Depp playing Darkness.
Yeah, well, no, Jack is supposed to be a young boy, which Tom Cruise, good Lord, we're talking about, you know, Tom Cruise's early career.
You do realize that's the same, that Legend came out the same year as Top Gun?
No, come on.
Yep. Look at your list.
No, Top Gun was 1986.
And that's the year that Legend was either released or re-released.
No, Legend was... Gotcha.
Hello.
Gotcha.
And they may have re-released it. But anyway, we are getting ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
We will hit that when we hit 1986. 1983. Again, no surprise. Return of the Jedi, number one. Now, after the success of Star Wars and then Empire Strikes Back, yeah, of course you're going to expect Return of the Jedi to do well. I don't think they expected it to do this well. $249 million-plus in the box office. Over 79 million tickets sold.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And it was over the top phenomenal for the effects. And that was what drew people to those movies, to the Star Wars movies, was they really did go above and beyond with the special effects.
Yeah.
The Sarlacc, yeah, that was a bit of a downer, but you know, they did the best they could with what they had. The remade version, I like the original better.
Have to agree. Absolutely, must agree.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, now, again, another movie that would never be allowed to fly in today's society is my top pick. But I have three I'd love to see. Actually,
right, and to reiterate, we're talking about 1983.
83,
right?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. No, okay, I have like five or six that are like top for me.
Okay.
Now, Octopussy.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the title would be outlawed. Jaws. Jaws 3D. That movie has kept me out of the ocean since it came out. The Outsiders.
Lord.
The Outsiders. Definitely would not work in today's society because of cell phones, satellites, all of that.
Well, the original story is, you know, gangs and youth in the 1950s.
Right. Now, see, remade in that light, yeah. Maybe they could squeak around the rest of it, but yeah. Now, here's another Stephen King. Cujo and Christine both came out in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of others. Eddie and the Cruisers. Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Mm-hmm.
A Christmas Story. Mr. Mom. War Games.
Well, you're literally, at this point, naming off, you know, movies that would be flashpoints for us nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
You know, War Games, and this, you know, the Chinese, you know, or the Russians, perhaps.
Right, and in the movie, they're assuming it's the Russians that have hacked their system when it's really a 16-year-old kid.
Right,
that exactly. Played by Matthew Broderick, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah, my top pick for 1983 is Trading Places. Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy.
It's hard to beat where you're coming from, especially since this was the number four
that it
movie.
Was.
And it was a huge, huge movie for Dan Aykroyd, who was just riding a crest, but the emergence of Eddie Murphy.
Right, as an adult actor and not
absolutely.
A juvenile stand-up comedian.
Yeah, some guy that was doing a bit, you know, in a Gumby outfit on Saturday Night Live.
Right.
You know, Trading Places is definitely where we were taking notice of Eddie Murphy, and right after that he did either Delirious or Raw.
Raw was actually 87? 86, 87?
The first one, I think it was, he did one that was 82 and one that was 86. I can't remember if it was Raw or Delirious.
Right, I think Delirious was first.
I think so, too.
But, yeah.
And I remember that comedy album, and there was a special on HBO, which they showed late at night.
Oh, yeah, after 8 o'clock and before 6 a.m.
Yep, and if you were lucky enough to have like an HBO subscription, you know, which somebody
and your mom and dad did not monitor the TV and be like, no, click.
Exactly. Eddie Murphy ended up just, you know, later on we got another 48 Hours.
48 Hours was actually 1982. Yeah, 1982. It was on my short list, but seeing as how we only have an hour, I didn't bring it up.
But yeah, Eddie Murphy was definitely coming into his own at this point.
He was, and everybody took Eddie Murphy to be the black comedian that loved the F word.
Yeah.
So, in order for him to be in these mainstream movies, of course, that was not acceptable. You don't use that kind of language. I mean, that was back when if the F word was in the movie at all, you only heard it once.
Yeah.
In the whole movie. Otherwise, it was a rated NC-17 instead of rated R.
You know, plus, why does this guy, this character, keep saying the F word? You know, Quentin Tarantino actually has a lot that he owes
Eddie Murphy.
To Eddie Murphy.
Yep.
And also my uncle, who used to be in the Navy, and frankly, myself in modern day. Sorry, F-bombs. I'm very comfortable with it.
Oh, I use the F-word like a comma. Anybody who's listened to this podcast knows that.
Use the F-word like a comma.
I'm serious.
You know what? You have Eddie Murphy to thank, miss.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Love to be able to shake his hand and thank him in person. .. And anybody who's seen Mamma Mia knows what that .. means.
Oh my God.
Anyway. Yeah, Return of the Jedi did amazing. So what's your top pick? 1983.
So 83, just what top pick for a favorite movie or what we could remake?
Both.
The best movie was Return of the Jedi. Sorry, that ended up basically wrapping it all up, and it was a pretty good movie.
And
so
it was a
I'm
way to end
that.
Things.
Yeah, and it made more money than the previous Star Wars movie.
Oh, much. And it
was still a spectacle.
And I've got to say, they should have left it where it was.
Yeah, they disappointed after that. And
right. Now, 1, 2, and 3.
Yes.
1, 2, and 3, I really, really liked.
Yeah. Or episodes, pardon me, 4, 5, and 6.
Right. 4, 5, and 6 were
right.
the...
This is where they should have.
That was the best. But 1, 2, and 3, I was okay with. 7, 8, and 9, I watched 7. I think I dozed through 8. And I've never seen 9.
Yeah, don't worry about it. It's fine.
That's what I've heard.
That being said, if we're still talking about 83, and I'm just going to throw this in there really quick, I remember seeing Eddie and the Cruisers on HBO in 1986, and did not have any idea that this fantastic movie had been released. Eddie and the Cruisers with Michael Paré and the music.
Yeah,
you know,
Eddie and the Cruisers, it came in at 109 on the
list. It was a failure. Technically, it didn't get traction until it got re-released, if you will, quote-unquote, in syndication on HBO. And HBO was kind of getting its footing, and it got on HBO, and people were like, oh, my God.
This is an amazing movie. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, I have Eddie and the Cruisers to thank for my research skills.
What's that?
All right. I saw it just as you did on HBO. And I'm like, is this real? You know, is this a real story?
Yeah, right.
You know, I
right.
was 12 at the time. So, you know, the whole, you know, I didn't know. And I wanted to know. So I start doing research. And I start looking at things that I know. Movie magazines. I start looking up albums in the little brochures you used to get out, you know, get 10 albums for free if you sign up for blah, 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 whatever. So,
oh my God.
Yeah. So, right. I found the soundtrack for Eddie and the Cruisers in one of those magazines. And I'm like, oh, shit. It was real.
Yeah.
This is the proof. Here's the proof. You know, not that the music was done by X, Y, and Z, but here's the proof. They did the album. They did the music. You know, blah, blah, blah. So that was the start of my whole I do research.
Yeah.
Because I had to know.
Yeah. No, exactly. You know, that whole film had like a mythology that we all, you know, we didn't know about. I don't know. You know, you wanted to investigate the Blair Witch Project.
Right.
Or,
but that,
you know, what
yeah,
have you.
Whatever. But it also, you know, it goes all the way into like, hey, Elvis. There's still questions about him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he just disappeared. Maybe he was just tired of the limelight. Maybe he just vanished.
That being said, they did ruin it by doing a sequel.
Yes.
And they dispelled the mysticism.
Right, which really ruined it for a lot of us.
Right.
But yeah, Something Wicked This Way Comes. Yeah, it showed up at number 100 on the list of 1983. Yeah. But once again, this was a movie that I was not aware existed until I saw it on HBO.
Yeah, right. Yes, Ray Bradbury.
My sister's number one movie for years. She loved this movie simply for the mysticism that surrounded it. So, yeah. Now, 1984, moving right along. And we're only at 1984, and we're at about 10 minutes out. So, I think we're going to go 84, 85. Pick up the last 4 years next week.
And Jen, listen, we should do like a two-parter because this is a vast and also fascinating.
Yes. Absolutely. Agreed. So we'll do either next week or the week after, we'll do part two. So let's hit 84.
84.
And then we'll do 85 through 89 next time.
All right. Before we get into this, just letting you guys know, the price per ticket, 1983, they ended up breaking $3 with $3.15. In 1984, the price per ticket, $3.36. This
right.
is a standard fare for an adult moviegoer.
No, that's not taking into account children's tickets or,
right.
you know, senior tickets, any of that. That is just the average price per ticket
right.
with gross and tickets sold.
That's so, right. That's their baseline.
Right. Now, in 1984, price per ticket was... Price per ticket was what?
$3.36.
Okay. Now, what did surprise me? The top movie really didn't, but the movie that came in second, it surprised
yes.
me that that was not the top movie.
Yes. Yes, yes.
The movie that came in second was Temple of Doom, Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now that was a phenomenal movie. The one that came in first is another one that lays very near and dear to my heart.
Indeed.
Ghostbusters.
Mm-hmm.
You got to admit, mm-hmm. cast of characters. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Oh, my God.
Amazing.
What charm. That movie was charming.
It was, and it was so sweet. You know, there was everything in this movie. You had danger. You had suspense. You had a love story. You had the geek that got the girl. You had all of it.
You know, I will actually posit that Ghostbusters beat out Temple of Doom because it's all about personalities in these two movies. But Ghostbusters had four and
five.
Actually, four. Yeah, counting.
No,
pardon
six.
Me, counting. No. Well, okay, so you have the base four, and
right.
then you've got five with Sigourney Weaver.
And then you have six with the lady who played the secretary.
Oh! I was going to go with Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis was coming into his own in that movie, but he didn't show it his best light.
Oh, well, you know, that being said, you know, Raiders of the Lost
okay,
Ark,
seven, or, then.
Pardon me, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, it was basically just Harrison Ford. But
right.
Ghostbusters, you had everybody.
Yes. Oh,
and
absolutely.
That, I think everybody operated on the same frequency, and I think that's kind of one of the reasons that it did as well as it did.
Speaking of Rick Moranis, wasn't he in an Eddie and the Cruisers type movie a little bit later?
I don't know. What?
Let me check on that. Give me a second. Let's see. But yeah, what was your top for that one?
For me, it's Ghostbusters. Sorry, it's Ghostbusters.
Really? Yeah. Sure. Well, see, for me as well, but there were so many.
Close, though. Yeah, and there were so many. Beverly Hills Cop.
Gremlins. Police Academy. Oh, my God. That would have been great. Splash. Splash is my number one to be redone.
Daryl Hannah.
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes. I mean, that was God. Just the... The epitome, you know.
And, you know, we had the Terminator, which, you know, in the final analysis, Terminator would move up.
Right.
You know, we've already kind of talked about Conan, and then Arnold Schwarzenegger followed it up with the Terminator. You're like, well, this guy's a star.
Yeah. And now he's the governor of California. So.
Yeah, and he's still a cool guy. But we had Nightmare on Elm Street. We had Neverending Story. We had the subversive and fantastic Ice Pirates.
Yes!
Ice Pirates was like, when you're really like thinking, and you want, you know, if you want to get jokes from Dan Aykroyd with a budget effect, you're going to love Ghostbusters. That being said, Ice Pirates is where they were like, we're working on like a pretty good budget, and we're the thinking man's movie. I really liked Ice Pirates because
so Ice Pirates smart. Was awesome. I'm sorry, the space herpy.
Yes, right. And that whole line where, you know, at the beginning they were talking about Catholic priests that weren't getting executed. He's like, they won't kill the priest just in case. He's like, just in case what? He's like, just in case there is a God. And I was like, yep, I like this movie.
Yeah, I was right. As a matter of fact, it was also in 1984. It was a movie called Streets of Fire.
With Michael Pare, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was
he was the boyfriend, and his girlfriend was a rock and roll star, and she got kidnapped.
Diane Lane.
By William Dafoe.
And Michael Pare, the guy that was in Streets of Fire, the main character, was the same guy that was Eddie and the Cruisers.
Okay.
Yeah, he came back right after that and was
nice.
That guy.
So yeah, I thought I'd seen that just recently. Recently being within the last 2 years. But yeah, I'd seen Streets of Fire.
Remember the song from Streets of Fire? I can dream about you.
Yes, God, yes.
I can't hold you tonight.
Gotta love it, man. Absolutely, that was one of the best songs ever.
And it was kind of the musical, if you will, at the time. Until Purple Rain.
Oh, yes. God. But the thing is, I didn't put that on my short list for movies to be redone because, Prince, you can't redo it.
Well, no.
Again.
Well, you know, I think they could redo Streets of Fire. They can't redo Purple Rain.
No, they can't redo Purple Rain, no.
Streets of Fire, maybe.
But yeah, 1983 movies to mention. Mr. Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Mom. That
Michael
one.
Keaton.
Yes. Well, Keaton's brilliant in anything he does.
Because I did that for a while.
You know. But the thing is, it wasn't when you were doing the Mr. Mom thing, it wasn't such a big deal.
Wow, very good point.
But back then, oh my God, your wife is working and you're not. What the hell is wrong with you?
Hilarity ensues.
Yes.
And
yeah, I love that when he's drying the child's butt off in the dryer, that air dryer in the bathroom. Any mother who's ever had a child that wet themselves in a restaurant has done this.
You know, I love these videos that they did, or these TikToks or whatever, where the dad's being a stay-at-home dad, and he gets his daughter's long hair ponytail together with a vacuum cleaner.
Yes!
You know, and he wraps it up, but when it comes down to it, Michael Keaton, like, way before that, ended up drying this kid's ass, you know. And
exactly!
That's the hack.
Yep, it was great. 1984 movies to mention. Neverending Story.
Wow. Yeah.
But another one again. Stephen King, Firestarter.
J- Drew Barrymore's next movie after E.T.?
Yes. Absolutely. And she was brilliant. Even as a child, she was amazing.
Yeah.
And she's been known to say the reason that she was so good as a child actor is because she made the parts real. She wasn't acting. She was becoming that character. So yeah, there's a hint for any childhood actors out there.
Right?
But yeah, she was absolutely brilliant in it. Some of the other ones, just real quick, that came through that was Stephen King. You've got... Stand By Me. That was 86. And then you've got... I'm looking at the short list, guys, so I may miss a few. I'm probably going to miss quite a bit because I can only find that one. Yeah. Stand By Me was one that people were amazed with Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
Not your classic Stephen King movie. It just really wasn't. But we're going to get into that next time. We are already over our hour, and I know last week we went, almost an hour and a half. So, we're going
to
go ahead.
To end it on, by the way. Great.
Oh, yeah. We are at 1985. We are going to go from 1985, hopefully, to 1989 next time. What do you think? Next week or the week after?
You know, the momentum, and I would hope that, people listening would be like, oh, my God, we should do this next week.
Right.
Let's do part
okay.
two.
All right. Absolutely. We'll do part two next week. And we still have at least one title in the hopper waiting on a review. So, Black Mass, eventually. Unless we get sidetracked again. And, then we'll see what happens.
Right.
But anyway, you can get a hold of us. We have our email, which is depheadsandhiddlestoners@yahoo.com. We have, as soon as my phone will cooperate, we have our dedicated phone line, which is, and it has changed, guys. I got a notice that I wasn't using the line enough, and they discontinued my number, so I had to get a new one. Help me save the phone number. Call in. Number is 949-373-5476. So you can get a hold of us either way, or you can go to our blog, which is depheadshiddlestoners.com, or you can go through barryreese.net and click on the link. Either way. So, get in touch with us. Let us know what's going on. Give us some idea of what you want to hear. You know, we don't always have to focus on our main actors. We are going to keep focus on them because, hey, they're what brought us here. So, other than that, we can still discuss pretty much anything as we have done this week, last week, and probably next week.
I feel the series that we're exploring with the 80s movies, these were, movies that put in place these blockbusters that our beloved Tom and our beloved Johnny
absolutely
their products.
Right.
Yeah.
And I have a question for you. I have a maybe for you. Johnny Depp's birthday is June 9th.
Right.
Okay, now we did Hiddleston 1981 for his birthday. How about we check out 1963?
Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Sound good?
That sounds great.
Excellent. So now we know what we're doing for Johnny's birthday. And I advertised a lot last year for the birthday shows. I did not do that for Hiddleston this year because it kind of crept up on me and I had a lot of personal issues going on.
Yeah.
So, we're going to have to make sure that people understand and recognize we're doing 1963, Johnny Depp's birthday, the year the devoted man was born. And we're going to have to see what's going on then.
Indeed.
Sounds good. All right, guys, you know how to get in touch with us. You know where to find us. Give us a call on the dedicated line. Give us a time zone so we don't call you back at 3 in the morning unless you want us to. And, you know, hey, oh, you also have some information. Your Xbox. Oh. PlayStation.
Oh, with PlayStation?
Yeah, how people can get in touch with you.
So look for ID on PlayStation Network, Traveler 2300, no spaces.
Awesome. So get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Until next week, I'm Jen.
I'm Carrie.
Have a good one, guys.
Love and peace.
Peace and love. See you later.
Bye.